Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. We're also pleased to have back here on the program Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and once a month on a Tuesday she is here, and we give you the opportunity to call in and ask questions about the home landscape. And if you're having a problem, give us the best description you can. Tell us what kind of plant it is. Tell us what you're seeing, and we'll see if she can help you out. Otherwise, more kind of general questions about the care of plants in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, grass, ornamentals, things that you can eat, house plants, any and all of that, that's certainly welcome. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. At Annie Boyne here. If you have questions, you can give us a call, and Sandy will do her best to help you out. Thank you very much for being here once again.
Good morning.
We were just talking about the weather's been kind of odd in the sense that it's been plenty warm. Humidity levels have been high. We have been getting rain, but depending on where you live, you could go a long time between rains or, you know, over at my house. I have a Niblets can in my front yard that's my, that's my rain gauge. And
official.
And hey, it works. Sort of. And it seems that we have had a number of occasions where we've had good rains, but we've gotten, as I said, I think there was one day over a period of maybe 2 days, we got about 2.5 inches of rain, and then long stretches where there isn't any. And I guess I'm not really quite sure how to figure out particularly when I should be watering, because I guess you want to have a fairly consistent level of moisture.
Right. Right.
And if you get 2.5 inches of rain, that's great, but you get that in 2 days, and then the next 2 weeks you don't get anything. You don't hardly get anything. I'm not really quite sure how to deal with that.
Yeah, well, I think it kind of depends on the plant, I guess, in some instances, certainly on how drought tolerant they are, all those kinds of good things. You know, I think it all boils down to actually checking the soil, just visually checking the soil or actually digging down a little bit and see how dry it is. And I don't think there's any way to sort of get away from that, especially when we get in these times where it gets really hot. And so you're never quite sure sometimes how much, and very humid, you're never always quite sure how much water that is actually being, you know, evaporated and transpired through the plant and all those kind of things. So sometimes it is hard to tell. I've been really surprised these last few days, certainly when we've had a lot of high humidity and stuff, that my containers that I normally had to water every single day actually didn't need as much water, even though it was hot. And I think it was just because the humidity was so high that it just wasn't evaporating like it normally would, and the plants weren't transpiring like they normally would. Mm-hmm. So it's odd sometimes. I know it's really hard, especially when people are first getting into gardening and you're thinking, oh, gee, you know, I can't figure this stuff out. But I think just checking the soil, really just visually looking at the plant, makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And then certainly if you have vegetable plants or anything that's actually producing a fruit, that's a very critical time for watering. And that's definitely a time when you need to think about moderation in the watering and trying to make sure that it stays evenly moist. A lot of the other plants will tolerate this kind of hot and wet and hot and wet kind of thing, and they do fine with that. So.
Okay. Well, we got some callers here. We'll start out talking with somebody in Danville, line 4. Hello.
Good morning. I have two questions. One is that I need to move some fern and some wild ginger. When is the best time to do that?
Well, really on both of those, I think you could get away with doing them certainly in September, you know, if you wanted to do it this year. Otherwise, I think ideally you'd be better off doing it like in April or something, you know, early in the season.
Well, I'll hold off on the fern,
yeah,
but the
if you
wild
don't have
ginger
to.
Is right around a gas meter that I think they're going to be exchanging. So, and then the second question, I discovered a small seedling of a sassafras.
Ooh.
Yeah,
that's great.
In amongst a clump of area of daylily, and so I dug around it. But the sassafras leaves are, I think, is it called chlorosis, where the veins are darker green?
Mm-hmm. And then the rest of it's yellow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I added some Miracle-Gro and then some Miracid, there's some new leaves are coming out fine, but the older ones are still remaining that two-toned appearance. What can I do best to harbor this? Gift of the sassafras.
Right. Well, and if other folks don't know, sassafras is really is a difficult one often to grow and actually to find it as a tree in the nursery centers simply because
right.
It's not easy to transplant.
Them,
yeah, it's hard. They're hard to find. I'm not sure I'd worry too much about those older leaves at this point. I think if the newer leaves are coming out, I think that's fine. You may want to actually try on those older leaves. I don't know if you were actually doing a foliar feed, as in a leaf feed. Did you actually pour it on to the leaves themselves?
No, I didn't.
You may want to try that. Just read the label on those. And again, I'd be using something like you were talking about that's for acid-loving plants. And it'll say on there for foliar feeding, do this and this. And then I would try foliar feeding. That may help those older leaves. But it's great that the newer leaves are coming out green because that's really what you're wanting
to. Well, it's still only about 15 inches tall.
Right. Well, that's great. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right. Bye. Thank you. Well, let's go to Champagne next, line number one. Hello.
Hello. I have a couple questions. First of all, newly planted landscaping, and we have a wine and rose, I think it's a spirea bush, and it's getting white. Caterpillar-looking bugs eating its leaves. We've tried 7, which is what the nursery told us, and it's not killing them. We're just wondering if there's another trick.
Are you sure it's not a Weigela? Not that it matters.
I'm sorry?
A Weigela?
That is right.
Yeah. I was going to say, I know a wine and rose Weigela. I don't know a wine and rose spirea, but it probably doesn't really matter all that much anyway. I'm surprised 7 isn't working because because normally 7 kills all the caterpillars. It does a really good job of killing all the caterpillars. It could be if it happens to be one of, well, even those, it would even still kill those. I was trying to think through that maybe it might be actually, because some of them are actually, this may sound gross, but they're actually sort of maggots from flies and wasps and things, but 7 should still kill those. And they're not traditional caterpillars, but that should still work. I think probably what I would, you may want to get it identified. That'd probably be the best thing to find the insect identified.
Okay.
7 would be good. Is there a way you can just sort of, a lot of times you can just sort of physically sort of strip these guys off.
Yeah.
Just take a glove and strip them off.
Yeah, I've definitely been doing that. I just find them on the next plant.
All over the place?
So we were trying figure out a uniform way of doing it. Hmm. And I was actually surprised because 7 took care of the Japanese beetles quite nicely, but they weren't eaten by the Japanese beetles. Now they're being eaten by caterpillars.
By something else. It's always something. Just goes
yes,
to show
is.
You.
Okay, well, that's fine. And then I guess I just had a quick other question about them. Are they acid-loving plants then? Someone told me that I should be adding a little bit of acid to the soil.
On the Weigelas you're talking about?
Yes.
I've never seen it really listed that they're finicky about their soil pH, to be honest with you. I've never seen that listed. As the previous caller was talking about, if you start seeing this iron chlorosis, this iron yellowing, where you see it get sort of greeny, sort of obviously on wine and roses, it's kind of hard because it's that kind of purplish foliage to it. But if you start seeing some color differences as the leaves start to turn yellow or something, then you know that there may be some issues with the pH. But I've never seen that on Weigela.
All right, great. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for your help.
Okay, thank you. And again, bye-bye. We'll go over to Belgium, over by Danville, line number 2. Hello.
Good morning. I have a couple, 3 questions. I don't want to dominate your whole time. Start off with, I grow a heritage-type peach called a Crawford. Most people don't know it. I'm sure maybe you've never met it. It's a very small peach. It's not commercially grown because of its size. But it has a very extreme extent of flavor of peach, much stronger than most, as most small fruits usually do. But I notice some of them have a brown worm that grows into the inside. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a freestone-type peach, okay, so you can easily pull the pit out of it. And some of them have it. You can scrape that out, and it still tastes good. It may sound crude, but, I like them.
just a little extra protein.
Just a little extra protein. No problem. But, I wouldn't mind getting rid of those. And I know that at some time during the plant's process, you're supposed to spray them or do something to do that. Now, I don't usually spray things because of the chemical situation.
Right.
But when would you try to discourage those little bugs?
Yeah, I think probably number one is just to find out really what it is, which one it is, because they get a couple of different worm problems. So to find out which one it is. And then the nice thing with a lot of the fruit trees, there's actually there's some traps, actually some pheromone traps, some scent traps and stuff that you can use on some of the insects, which is really good to help you monitor when they're there. Mm. And then you can time your sprays. Okay, now I know I've got them, and now I can take care of them that way. So the nice thing is, once we find out what it is, and a lot of times you can sort of figure out a program where you don't have to do these regular sprays, because we do have a regular spray schedule for peaches if people want to do all the sprays, but it's more of like a timed, depending on the stage of growth of the particular plant, rather than whether that insect's there or not. So the nice thing is there are certainly a number of those. So what we need to do is get identified. I assume you've got some now, or is
that... Oh, yeah. The trees are just covered with them. Just
okay.
Lovely.
Okay. You might want to bring one in, and I'm sorry I didn't catch exactly what city you were in.
I'm over near Danville, Belgium.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, you could take it to the Vermilion County Extension Office.
Yeah, it's up there on North Vermilion, up there someplace.
Yeah, well, I think they've actually moved.
Oh.
Check your
phone book.
I think they've actually moved more west side of town.
Oh, okay.
But at any rate, I would take in a sample, and then they can give you a better idea what insect it is, and then come up with a better spray program for you if you want to do some very, very timed sprays.
To step on to another project,
mm-hmm.
your previous listener with the sassafras, I can't believe it's hard to grow sassafras trees.
It's not that it's hard to grow them.
Oh.
It's hard to transplant them,
yeah,
which is a difference.
I cut them down when they're large and turn them into different projects, and they've got the most intense flavor. It smells like root beer when you're doing it.
Yeah, they're wonderful trees. I mean, I think they're great trees. The problem is that for a production standpoint, if you're a garden center, a grower, they're ones that are hard to transplant.
Oh.
So it's not that they're hard to grow. You're absolutely right. They're fairly easy to grow and beautiful trees, but it's just that trying to get them to your house is somewhat of an issue.
Now, they seem to show up on their own around my place.
Yeah, right. Well, there you go.
And the last question, and I've asked you this before, and I just wonder if there might be something more to it that's not being noticed. In the spring of the year, the sycamores have anthracnosis. And every year, they put on a set of leaves, and they lose a set of leaves, and then they put on the second set of leaves. And I've noticed over the years that they've done it okay, and they seem to strive okay, but now a lot of the very crowns of sycamore trees have a lot of dead limbs at the very tops.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid that this is beginning to affect them. Is there anybody else noticing this?
Well, I mean, it's very common for sycamores to get anthracnose, which you were talking about, which is normally a leaf disease problem, but it also affects the branches.
Yeah.
And the fungus actually get inside the branches to the point where it can kill the branch. And so we see this, and usually it's just, you might have 6 to 8 inches of dead growth, and then that falls off and that kind of thing. But, you certainly in some years, depending on how bad it is, you could see more dieback. So it's not just a leaf disease problem, which is what we usually see. And you could be seeing something else going on, maybe with the particular trees that you're looking at.
Well, I have quite a bit of a creek that runs through my property, and of course that's where sycamores grow the best, is right along the stream.
Sure.
And I have been losing some fairly substantial sized limbs off these. I mean, we're talking limbs well longer than your arm.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, substantial branches.
It's certainly year after year, and depending on the severity. I mean, but I have not heard, I haven't seen any report or anything that says it's been particularly worse the past few years. Although it's, when we get wet springs, we're going to have anthracnose. We pretty well can guarantee it.
I sure hate to lose those trees. Yeah. They're such beautiful trees. They're nasty trees to have in a yard, but they're beautiful trees in the woods.
Mm-hmm. Well, if all else fails, if you want to pursue it farther, probably the University of Illinois Plant Clinic would be a good place to go. And whether you could, take some pictures, obviously, with big trees, take some pictures. If you get some samples of maybe some of the branches that aren't quite dead, if it's a huge tree, I know that's tough. But if you can get some samples and then take it into the plant clinic, that'd really probably be your best bet.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh, right, sure.
Thank you. Our guest this morning on Focus 580 in this first hour, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County once a month on a Tuesday. It's always the second Tuesday of the month. She is here, and she does her best to help you out with problems in the home landscape. So if it's an issue that has to do with turf or with ornamental plants, trees, shrubs, stuff that you can eat, house plants. If you're having a problem, you can give us a call, describe it. She'll see if he can help you out. And then, you know, other sorts of general questions about selecting plants and getting them into your home landscape, any and all of that, certainly welcome. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Piatt County is the next caller on the toll-free line, line four. Hello.
I have a question that I read in a book, and I can't even think of the name of the book, and I was just skimming through for roses, and the woman said that she always took her banana peels and cut them and put them under her rose bushes. And I was wondering if that's because our family uses a lot of bananas. And I've been putting them under my rose bushes, and they've done well this year, but that's not exactly proof. So I was asking if there's anything to that, or is that just like tossing tea leaves on something?
Yeah, I don't know. Was she saying that it somehow made them better? Or,
yes.
Or
it was for probably potassium or something.
Yeah. Well, I guess I would be more inclined to think it's more along the lines of, you know, anything when we have decomposing kinds of things, there's a certain amount of nutrients there. I doubt in the long run, if you look the amount of banana peels that you're putting out there, you're probably not really putting a whole lot of, I would say, nutrients out there. But certainly it's organic matter. You know, it's going to break down. It's organic matter. I'd be a little bit concerned about, you know, what else it attracts when you've got banana peels out there.
Yeah, I haven't had any problem with that. I've been watching, and it's been okay. But I just wondered if there was any, useless or...
Well, I have not heard, I mean, I have not seen a study that really talks about that. But I just sort of thinking about any of that organic matter kind of stuff, like you were talking about the tea leaves or coffee grounds or anything, you know, stuff decomposes, and we like, you know, roses certainly like organic matter, and so there's certainly something to that.
Well, my next question is it now the time to stop fertilizing roses?
Yeah, it really is. Okay. Usually we say about around the 1st of August or so to stop fertilizing roses so that they can get ready for winter. You want them to slow down. So, yeah, good point.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thanks for the call. What about generally about fertilizing other sorts of things? Is it okay to... I know that there are some people that say, well, there's really no point particularly in fertilizing when it's really hot.
Right.
Otherwise, particularly if you're using a general water soluble fertilizer, something where the concentration is not going to be really all that high, is it pretty much okay to fertilize all through the summer?
Yeah, again, it probably depends on the plant, certainly. But you know, but as you were saying, once we get above like 85 degrees. Plants are not terribly efficient at that. You know, they really kind of shut down, and they really, again, depending on the plant, I have a banana at home that's just loving this weather, and it's doing really well. So some of the tropicals, you know, obviously do much better in some of these higher temperatures, but for a lot of plants, they sort of shut down. So that really probably isn't the time to be thinking about doing a lot of fertilization. Once we start getting into, like, September and certainly October for some of the woody plants, that's just fine for them. You know, they can go ahead and use that even at cooler temperatures. And certainly with trees, you know, until the ground freezes, they're certainly still doing that. So you could certainly do fertilization really late in the year, depending on what type of the plant it is.
Okay. Well, we have a number of other callers, so let's get back to the phones and someone in Urbana, line one.
Good morning. I have an ornamental question. I planted a dogwood because it reminded me of home back in Virginia in a fairly protected place, and it didn't last the winter. So I replaced it with a redbud, which I was hoping would be a little more hardy in this area. And it really struggled at first, too. Every single leaf was immediately affected by some tan spots. And it looked like it was really struggling. And the nursery suggested when I described the soil that it may be too much clay because it didn't seem like I ever needed to water it. It was always a little damp. Mm-hmm. So I scooped out about a cubic foot of soil on either side of the root ball and backfilled with sand. And I think it's recovered. I'm seeing new green leaves now. But I was curious when I pulled out the old tree from the exact same spot, which maybe wasn't the best place to plant it, and planted this one, in the area of the former root ball, there were numerous bright white, tiny little white spots. I don't know if they were animal, plant, vegetable, mineral, but it didn't look like a normal thing, and it didn't seem like that's what was in the soil when I dug it up, and I wondered what that could have been.
It was white spots on the roots or on the...
Mixed in the soil.
White spots, like white round things or white...
Yeah, like the size of a grain of salt. and bright white like grain of salt.
Okay. And it's not perlite, the soil amendment perlite?
I don't know. I didn't put anything in it, but it may
Well, it certainly could. Yeah, a lot of times containerized plants, depending on how you bought the dogwood, a lot of times containerized plants may have perlite in it, which just is just one of the soil amendments. That's the only thing I can think of right offhand that would be bright white like that. And that's fine. You know, that's not a big issue for
you. Okay. I was concerned it was a fungal disease or something.
No, you probably see, usually with fungus, you actually see more of a... Oh, how do I want to say it? More like fingers. You know, it sort of grows out, and you'll see that kind of a thing, almost like a mat where it kind of grows out.
Right.
You'd see that.
Okay. And if you have time for one more, I want to put some plants in heavy pots out on the road flanking my mailbox to encourage the mail deliverer to not cut through so much of my grass as they're pulling into the box. And I have the pots now, but I need to think of something that will survive in the sun on the south exposure of a house out in the middle of the cornfields, and and also something that's hardy and can be neglected a bit, since I'm pretty plant naive and don't always get around to watering what I need to water.
Are these, do you need something fairly tall, or I don't know how big these pots are?
Something, well, the pots are 2 feet across by maybe 2 feet deep, so they're pretty big, and I'd want something tall enough to be visible, so they're they can see them a long ways off.
Right. Well, you know, actually, some of the ornamental grasses do quite well in pots. Even that, like Carl Forrester feather reed grass, is really kind of nice, very upright. And you'd have to water it, you know, to get it established. But once it gets established, they're pretty tough. And I've even had those winter over. I don't know what kind of pots you have, but if they're pots that can stay out all winter, I've even had those winter over in pots.
Well, that was the other question. Do I need to move them away from that exposure once it does get cold?
Are these pots that can stay outside? They're not ceramic or...
No. No, they're plastic.
They're plastic, okay. Well, if they're plastic, and depending on, well, that's a halfway decent-sized pot, but you'd have to be something pretty tough, and to realize with a smaller, the winter thing's over, you really need really big pots, you know, something that has a lot of soil mass to it.
Right.
You get into the smaller pots, and it's a little more iffy. So if you don't mind maybe taking the chance of it may or may not live through, certainly ornamental grasses, daylilies, I've had them winter over, sedum, I don't know if you're familiar with sedum, some of the taller sedum, like autumn joy sedum, and there's a bunch of new purple ones, too, that are really pretty tough. Once they get going, they're tough.
Well, I have some ornamental grasses that I transplanted from around a utility pole to a more freer place, and they've just tripled, quadrupled in size. It's time for me to split them up and move them somewhere else, so maybe I could stick those in there.
Right, and the post person would definitely probably see them.
Yeah.
They're fairly tall.
All righty. Thanks very much.
Good luck.
Thanks for the call. Right. Let's go to line number two. This is Champagne. Hello.
Yes, line two?
Yes.
No, okay, there was interference. I just had a question about whether it would be good to divide my irises now while it's not quite so hot.
Actually, with the bearded irises, this is an excellent time to do them. It's one of the few perennials we actually recommend to do it in July and August because that rhizome tends to rot if you do it in really kind of wet, cool weather. So this is a perfect time.
Okay.
Sure.
And if I put them in the ground right away, do I have to wash off the bulbs and disinfect them and all of that stuff? Or
you know, it really is. Now, some folks like to dip them in a 10% bleach solution only because that if you've had trouble with iris borer and then bacterial soft rot that comes in afterwards, if you've had problems with iris borer and bacterial soft rot, then I would recommend probably dipping them in a 10% bleach solution.
Oh.
If that hasn't been a problem for you, and you're obviously doing your division now when it's a good time to do it, I'm not sure it's necessary.
Okay. No, I have not had any problems at all.
As you said, it actually is probably better, you know, say plant them right away because of that cut surface. You're actually kind of better if you can just sort of leave them out for maybe a few hours or for the day, and you actually let that cut surface kind of dry up.
Oh.
That actually is kind of a good idea, really, for those. And so, again, you won't have problems with rot.
Okay. So maybe about 8 hours or so?
Yeah, that's fine. And then go ahead and then plant them.
Okay. Great. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right, very good.
Bye.
We are at our midpoint here in this hour of Focus 580. Sandy Mason is with us, and we'll continue to take questions on things that grow on the home landscape, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Sandy is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And we have somebody standing by here ready to go next, and that's line 3 in Urbana. Hello.
Hello. I have a hydrangea problem. I made a mistake a few years ago and bought a hydrangea Nikki, which is a beautiful plant, but it's not really hardy enough.
Mm-hmm.
It dies back to the ground most winters, so I have to put a snow fence around it and fill it with straw or leaves. It's getting pretty tall this summer, and I'm wondering, can I prune it back about this time? It's probably getting up close to 5 feet, and the snow fence is only 4 feet.
The only problem is that, you know, they bloom on old wood.
I know.
I think if you still have some old wood, they still should flower for you. But I'm trying to think, you know, they bloom on the ends, so I'm a little concerned that if you do too much pruning, you're going to be pruning off the flower buds.
Well, that's what I was concerned about.
And especially this time of year, we're getting to that point where there would be some concern about that. So, boy, I don't know. I think it'd be a little iffy, and I'd hate to see go to all that trouble and then, you know, lose them simply because they were pruned off. So, I'd be a little concerned about doing that. To be honest with you.
You think that as long as the if it winter kills above the protected area, that it will still bloom on the lower part.
I would think it would. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that it would because it's still old wood, but the problem is if they've already produced their, see, I'm trying to think through this, if they've already produced their flower buds, like forsythia and some of those, you could be cutting off the flower buds when you cut them back. And then also the winter cuts them back for you, which is a lot of the problem with those things.
Well, I'd still have the sides protected, so maybe that's the thing to do, take a chance.
Yeah, you may want to just try that, and then you can call me back and let me know. You know what, Sandy? That didn't work very well because I still didn't get any flowers. So normally, do you get flowers when you cover it?
Yes.
Okay.
This year, it has grown exceptionally well.
Okay.
It killed back almost to the ground.
And then you still got flowers?
No, I got one flower.
Okay. See, I'm thinking that it still affects it when, you know, even that top, losing that top growth still affects it.
Yeah. It's grown remarkably well, except that it didn't flower. And I'm going to make sure I get it protected this year. Last fall, I had some back problems and didn't mulch it the way I normally do.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. So you think it's best just to let it go and hope?
Yeah. And then just hope. And then depending on what winter we have, you know, you never know.
And then next year, if that doesn't work, I can try pruning maybe a little earlier.
Right. I think one way or the other, if that top growth, either you prune it back or the winter prunes it back, either way, you're going to find out whether that's going to affect the flowering.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I should get nice bloom on the sides below the...
Right.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Sandy.
Okay. Well, good luck.
Bye.
To the next caller. This is someone in Champaign. It's line number 1. Hello.
Yes, I have a hibiscus that I keep in our sunroom, and it usually flowers very nicely in the summer. And this year, I'd got no flowers at all.
Mm.
And it just occurred to me last night that I had not fertilized it at all this summer. And I'm wondering if it's too late.
Now, is this outside or is it inside still?
No, it's inside.
It's inside. Okay. And then obviously it's getting plenty of sun.
Yes.
And it's not drying out too much?
No.
Okay. Because sometimes those big guys, when they start to get really big, you know, sometimes they kind of outgrow their pots.
No, it's not that big. It's only maybe about 18 or 22 inches high.
Was it growing or has it been growing for you?
Yes. It seems to be growing, and I've got another hibiscus in the same room that's just doing great. It's a different type of hibiscus, but...
Yeah, I think you're right. I certainly would try fertilizing. I think that's a good way to try to get it to at least do some flowering. Obviously, as we get, you know, closer into winter, you know, fall and winter. I hate to say the W word, but winter. Then you wouldn't want to fertilize too much because you want it to slow down, even though it's indoors, because of the less light. But at this point, I'd still go ahead and fertilize it. But I'd sure, you know, you might even, you know, if you can pop it out of the pot. I don't know how big a deal that is, but you can pop it out of the pot and see what's going on with the roots, and you know, really see if it's growing well. And, and they certainly get some insect problems. They get spider mites. Is a big issue for them, and they really can.
I haven't seen
them.
Any at all.
Okay. Okay.
But I'll look and check the roots.
Because sometimes stress really keeps them from growing, and therefore really putting on much flower.
Okay. And what kind of stress would it be on the roots?
Yeah, it could be anything, and that's why I was wondering about watering. You know, either water stress or from insects or any number of things.
I've been watering. It seems to do best if I water every other day.
Okay, so they're obviously getting plenty of water.
Yeah. Like. Okay. And what type of fertilizer is best?
Well, for those guys that flower, probably more like a 5-10-10 or just buy something that says it's for flowering plants. We usually don't use quite as much nitrogen when we fertilize flowering plants.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The 5-10-10.
Yeah, something like that is just fine.
Uh-huh. All right, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you for the call. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455 is the number to call if you'd like to talk with our guest, Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she's here once a month, always on the Tuesday, the second Tuesday, and we take your questions on lawn and garden care. Only 3 weeks of climatological summer left.
Don't say that.
Well, you know,
I don't want to hear this.
I have kind of mixed feelings about the whole thing.
So fast,
I've come to appreciate summer because things grow, and that's lovely. But then it gets to the point where I'm just sick to death of it. I'm ready for a change. I've had it.
You realize I'm in horticulture, right?
Yes.
Gardening person.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
True confessions. Okay.
Yes, it's true.
I appreciate your honesty.
And I have great affection for you anyway. We have several callers here. Urbana, Danville, Champaign. Let's go to Urbana, line one. Hello.
Yes. I was calling about black walnuts. Mm-hmm. We have a group of trees, and they are just laden with nuts.
Oh, wow.
And usually, you know, we just let them drop and the squirrels have a heyday. I was wondering, is there anything that you can do? I mean, like, how do you use them? Can you crack them?
Sure. They're not easy, though, I will tell you. Speaking of hard nuts to crack, because you have to, well, number one, you want to wait till they start fall. You know, you're probably going to wait till they start falling anyway,
right.
but you'll get a better idea. And actually, I don't know, how big a tree is this? Is this one you could actually shake the branches or anything to help them fall?
No. Well, no.
Ooh, too big.
Yeah, too big.
You'll have to let the squirrels do that for you. But, you know, once they drop, if you can pick them up fairly quickly, once they drop, you're going to have to get that outside green stuff off.
Mm-hmm.
And I will warn you, that will stain.
Right.
So you really want to make sure. And I've had people tell me all kinds of stories where they put them in a bag and they run over them with their car or, you know, all kinds of things to get that. To get that outer husk off, and the sooner you get that off, the better. If you want a mild nut, the longer that husk stays on, it gets a. And some people really like that really intense black walnut taste, and some people don't. But it will actually even make the nut darker. So you may want to get the husk off right away, depending on how you want them. And then after that, boy, it's up to you on how to crack them. They are tough to crack. I will tell you.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, but I think there's actually some specific nutcrackers that are meant for walnuts, and so you may want to do a little bit of searching around to see if you can find those. You probably have to order it, obviously, but they're certainly very tasty.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. And line number two, this is Danville. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
What I have is, I thought this was called a walking stick bush or a crooked walking stick bush, but... Since then, I've seen it called curly willow several times. This bush I planted on the curb last year, and it grew to be about 15 feet tall, beautiful. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I lost one huge section of it, turned completely brown. Mm-hmm. The ends of the branches turned black. So I cut that out, and it went along fine for maybe another month. And then within a period of 3 days, the whole thing turned brown.
Mm-hmm.
The all of the leaves, everything was falling off, and the branches towards the ends would all be black. Mm-hmm. Any clues?
Well, I guess, what do the leaves look like? Because you really described two different plants. There's Harry Lauder's walking stick, which has kind of a wider leaf. And then there's actually Curly Willow, which has a very linear, elongated leaf, but, you know, two different plants.
Well, the curly willow then, because they're a very linear, smaller leaf.
Okay, small, kind of elongated leaf then.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the one thing about willows are tough plants. I will give them that. But they do get a number of canker diseases. That actually can kill off the whole branch like that. Now, are there still some green branches on there? I'm not sure if you told me that.
Very few.
Yeah. Yeah, they do get some canker diseases, and I almost bet that's probably what it is. And it's a fungal disease. And usually the best thing you can do is just cut those off.
Okay.
If you truly wanted to get in, we could probably look into it further if you wanted to try to use a fungicide or something along those lines. But you still have to get those old ones out of there, because then the fungus is just hanging out on those old branches, so you got to get that out of there.
Okay, I did just cut it all back yesterday, but I wasn't sure whether there was even any use in trying to save the whole thing, or if I needed to dig it up. You know?
Well, I think you'll find that willows are very good at suckering up from the base. If there's anything left there, as far as and I would almost bet there is, as far as the roots and stuff, they're very good at suckering back up again. And that's actually how some people treat them. They just cut them to the ground every year and let the new growth start back up again. And it keeps from the cankers from actually forming, because you don't have, you know, cutting it down each year like that. And it keeps them smaller and actually fairly vigorous. So you may find that actually is a pretty good technique for you, is to cut them back every year.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. All the way to the ground then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, go for
All
it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Right, mm-hmm. Very good. And another caller here. This is Champagne next, and line number 3. Hello.
Could you say something about the Master Naturalist program? I think it's so sad that people do not know their native vegetation or how to work with it.
Right. Well, we're actually starting. It's brand new, really, to Illinois. It started. The first one started in Rock Island in 2005, and it's through the U of I Extension. But here locally, we actually have an East Central Illinois Master Naturalist program, and it's with the Urbana Park District as well as Champaign County Forest Preserve District, and then the U of I Extension here in Champaign County have come together to really form this group. And we're starting our first training in September, so we're real excited about it. So I think people are going to be hearing more and more about it. I think it's really kind of set up like the Master Gardener program. You get a wide variety of training sessions, and then there's an internship and volunteer internship after that. So I think the nice thing is that it really broadens people's perspective on everything from, you know, grasslands to snakes and frogs and mammals and you name it. So I think you're going to hear a lot more about them in the future. So thanks for asking.
Thanks very much. I really encourage it.
Okay,
right,
great.
Very good. Well, again, other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. You have plant questions, things that grow in the home landscape, give us a call. And Sandy, we'll see if she can help you out. Is there something in the way of event that you would like
you
to talk about?
She's
got something. She's waving. That's the universal sign for
radio.
I want to mention this thing.
Good thing it's radio.
Yes.
Now, I thought I mentioned, you know, in past programs, I've talked about these telenets that we do statewide. And this is actually one that I'm going to be presenting on August 15th and August 17th, called Incredible Edible Flowers. And it's just kind of a fun thing. You know, we've gotten to hear more and more about edible flowers. And I'm just going to kind of go through some of them, you know, which ones are edible, kind of some recipes. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's August 15th at 1 o'clock, August 17th at 7 o'clock. So you get kind of two opportunities. And check with your local extension office, because it's being held statewide. I'll be here in Champaign, but it's held statewide live, and you can go through the whole program at that time. So it's really good. So check with your local extension office and see if they're presenting or having that available to you.
Okay. And so if you can do this no matter where you are, but you will have to go to whatever your local extension office is.
Right.
That's
right.
Where, okay.
Right, right. So locally, I mean, you don't have to drive down to Champaign to hear me talk, whether you'd want to or not, I don't know. But if you do, now you don't have to. So that's a nice thing about it, having these telenet programs, mm-hmm. because it's live, but yet you don't have to travel so far, which is good these days.
Okay, very good. Well, we got some other folks here to talk with. Paxton is our next caller. This is line number 1. Hello.
Sandy?
Mm-hmm.
Hi.
Yeah.
I have, my neighbor gave me some red dogwood, I believe they're bushes.
Mm-hmm.
And we have planted them along the west side of our house to possibly get rid of a nosy neighbor that lives about a quarter of a mile away. Now, are these things, what are their growth rate? Are they trees? Are they bushes?
Yeah. Yeah.
He didn't elaborate on anything with me.
Boy, you're very trusting.
Yeah, they are kind of a pain, and we want to kind of shield ourselves from them.
Right. Well, the red twig dogwoods are, they're really great plants in that they're very durable for the most part,
mm-hmm.
and they grow very fast. I think you'll find easily they're putting on probably a foot of growth a year. So they grow very fast. Yeah, and they're probably top out at about maybe 15 feet, so they can actually get quite tall. You can cut them back actually in, you know, sort of late winter, early spring, if you want to, if you don't want to keep them quite that, don't want to have them quite that tall, but they grow fairly fast and really pretty tough plants. And the red twigs themselves are really pretty in the wintertime. So.
Okay, I ran over a couple of them with my lawnmower and they look like they're coming back. Will that happen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as I said, and they are one of those shrubs that will sucker up from the base,
mm-hmm.
and so it's I wouldn't recommend running them over maybe with your lawnmower, but you know if it happens so they're pretty good at coming back that way. So absolutely, I would just, since they're new plants, I'd still probably water them if it happens to be drought period. But after that, you know, future years, you really won't have to worry about them too much.
Okay, Sandy, you are fantastic.
Okay, well, good luck.
Enjoy your time.
Oh,
thanks. You so much.
Thanks.
Very good.
Good luck with your neighbor.
Well,
let's go.
Hopefully, they didn't recognize his voice.
Oh,
maybe they should.
Maybe they don't care. Maybe they want him to know they don't like him. Lamont is the next caller on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a flowering maple, and it's doing quite well here. There's every once in a while I see holes in a leaf. I don't know what's getting at them, but I don't spray it or fertilize it.
Mm-hmm.
What my question is, how do I treat it? I want to keep it over the winter. Mm-hmm. Does it mm-hmm. need a lot of sun? Should I keep it growing or let it, whatever?
You know, I would just treat it like a house plant,
uh-huh.
And then just keep it growing through the wintertime. It
uh-huh.
probably won't flower for you. More than likely, it won't flower for you in the wintertime, but they actually do pretty good as house plants.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they really do. And actually, before we started seeing them outdoors, they were really touted more as an indoor plant, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
So that's the good news.
It's my first experience with
this good.
Particular.
Just don't let it freeze. That's the biggest thing. Just don't let it freeze.
Does it need a lot of sun a lot of light indoors?
I'd say more medium.
Okay.
You know, probably the more light, the better on these. And you might actually get some flowering if you could get it more light. But other than that, I wouldn't consider them a low light plant. No,
I just want to keep it. I don't care if it flowers because it's still flowering now, and it's a beautiful.
Yeah, they really are pretty. The flower
maples. Thank you very much.
Sure,
very good. Again, other questions are welcome. We have maybe about 7-8 minutes left in this part of the show with Sandy. 333-9455 toll free 800-222-9455. I was just curious. Because of the earlier caller, we had the man who said he had planted the dogwood and it didn't make it through the winter, and I guess I was kind of surprised. I would figure a dogwood, maybe it depends. Would depend on the variety and where it was.
Yeah.
I would think a dogwood would be okay.
Yeah, the one thing with dogwoods, and I should have mentioned it, but we kind of got off on his other issues. But the one thing about dogwoods is the flowering dogwoods is it's very important to look at where it came from. That we know that there are certain kind of, I guess you could call them strains, for lack of a better word, of ones if they're grown in say the Georgia and very southern states because they're native to those areas, and if that plant's coming from that area and then coming up here, they just don't make it through the winter. They just don't. Even though it's still a flowering dogwood, it's still, you know, the same species and everything, it's just because there's enough of a difference and they've been around long enough that we see these different strains. So really look very closely at where it came from. It needs to come from Indiana, with, you know, some place that's close to Illinois and not way far south. And I'd even question even Tennessee, although that may be where some of them. So find out where it came from and get a local source, northern source, something like that.
Even if you buy this from a local greenhouse, that doesn't necessarily mean that it was grown in central Illinois.
Yeah, so it could. And a lot of them are probably coming up from the south. And
so
it's the tree that I hear the most that people kill them off.
Huh.
And it is mainly, we really think it is mainly because of that. And plus, they're a little finicky in the very beginning. They like moist soil, but they don't like it too wet. They like high organic matter. They like an acidic soil. So you do have to do a little bit of soil amendments if you're planning on doing a flowering dogwood, but definitely look for the ultimate source for it.
Okay, well, very good. Let's talk with someone else. This is someone in Lovington, and it's line number one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. We've got some soft maples. That's what I call them anyway, that their leaves are all curled up really tight in a ball, and I've seen this across about a half-mile area. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to affect the sugar maples at all. I was just wondering if you knew what it might be.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed any bumps or anything on them, or like galls, or?
Well,
have you looked at the leaves really close? Or are they actually brown and curling, or are they just still green and curling?
Well, they're all. I'm looking at them right now. <They're kind of
laughs> you know, light. That's the beauty of cellular phones. A few years ago, I couldn't have done this. So
yeah. But they're all, I'd say they're about half size, and they are kind of mottled yellow to green, and the tips are dying on this one I'm looking at right now. But it's pretty well, we thought at first it had something to do with, well, one of them's close to a burn barrel, and we thought it was that, and then we thought, well, maybe it's the chemicals blowing around, but it's just, it's going from, it's at least across a quarter mile, and there's no pattern that I can think of that caused it.
And it's all over the tree, or just?
It doesn't seem there. You'll see one once in a while that is like full size and looking halfway healthy, but it seems to me like those are the ones that are coming back out and trying to start up again. But it seems like they'll do that, and then they'll be affected.
Well, you know, we certainly, they can get the, and I assume there must be a silver maple. When you say soft maple, maybe it's a silver
maple. Well, no, they're not silver maples that I'm aware of. They're maples that were bought and planted, and they're not silver maples. I know that. They're not sugar maples.
Red?
Yeah.
Maybe a red maple.
Red, I suppose.
Oh, could be. Well, in that case, could be a number of things. Do you see any reddening on the leaves? Are they red at all?
No, they don't. Yeah, they're not turning like they would in the fall. They're just kind of dying.
Well, I guess a couple things. We see leaf scorch on red maples. We actually see a bacterial leaf scorch on them. And if you notice this tree keeps doing it year after year after year, then it may be something we really want to test for to see if it has bacterial leaf scorch, because that actually stays in the plant and really can be a big issue for those. We also see problems with leaf hoppers on red maples. And that's why I was asking about if it turned red, because it kind of gets this, they curl up, but they get kind of a reddish border kind of to the edges of them. So you may want to actually take in a plant sample at a plant clinic, because there could be some, you know, semi-severe issues to it, or it could be, you know, just leaf hoppers, and it's not a
huge they have on the seeds, the little winglets even are brown.
Yeah, I would. They get a number of problems, and I think it'd be worth taking in a sample at the plant clinic if you could.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right, very good. And certainly, again, we have time for a couple of more questions. 333-WILL, toll free, 800-222-WILL. I have a little patch in my yard where I'm thinking about trying to get some reseeding of grass. And I have been kind of holding off because I was just thinking, well, it's just way too hot. At what point do the temperatures get to the point where you would say it's okay to go ahead and try, and chances are it's going to germinate for you?
Yeah. Well, we really are getting to the point. Usually we say like from August 15th to September 15th is usually a pretty good time to think about reseeding, because then hopefully we'll have some fall rains and you'll get it going. Probably the biggest thing, and if you're looking at the forecast and there's a stretch of really, really hot temperatures, is not so much for the seed as is for you trying to keep it wet. And that's going to be the issue, trying to keep it moist. So that's why we'd like the temperatures to drop back a little more. But Kentucky bluegrass and some of those actually do fairly well at fairly high soil temperatures. Okay. So that's not. It's just trying to keep it wet.
So sometime probably in the next couple of weeks, probably be okay to.
Yeah, and usually even through September is usually a good time, because usually by then we really started to see the temperatures moderate.
Okay. And in terms of fertilizing. When would you, if you're going to do it at the end of the season, when is the time to do that? Mm-hmm. Probably around the mid-September, maybe?
Yeah, actually, usually around Labor Day really is a good time to be thinking about if you're going to do, and actually, if you never fertilize and want to do at least one fertilization, that's the best time to do it is around Labor Day. So you might want to do that. If you want to do another fertilization in late November, you can do that.
But. Okay. We have some callers here. I don't know if I'm going to get them all. We'll try. We'll go McLean County, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a quick question about some maple trees.
Mm-hmm.
We planted 6 different maple trees, 3 different varieties, but 6 of them. And 3 of them have really limp leaves. And the only thing we can figure out that they're closest to our shed, which is a brick shed. We watered them very regularly last year, and this year we haven't watered them as much, only because we've had more rain. Any idea why?
Well, when you say limp leaves, do you mean the leaf itself is falling down, or the thing that holds it on is falling down?
They're like drooping, basically. I mean, you know, instead of kind of being horizontal to the ground, they're kind of like, you know, drop. They're not dropping off the tree, but they're drooping.
And but they look healthy other than that?
Yeah, they look okay. Yeah, they do. They do look okay. What's interesting is that we have 2 out of those 3. They're actually 4 on that side of the house, and 2 are exactly the same variety, and the middle 2 are the same. But these 3 that are close to the shed seem to be have droopy leaves.
But they're a different variety than the other ones?
Well, one of them is a variety that's similar to the one that isn't drooping. But there are two varieties there that are drooping. One, there are 2 of them that are same variety, and then 1 that's not the same variety, but its partner is not drooping.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, yeah, I'm not sure exactly what's going on there, but you know, if they're drooping, I'm you know, maybe just that particular tree. We never know, but certainly if you know if they're not getting enough light. But it doesn't really sound like that would be the issue on a young tree like that. So if they're getting plenty of light, then that's probably not an issue. If they're getting plenty of moisture, then that's probably not an issue. If they've grown really rapidly, sometimes they tend to droop just because they've grown so fast. And then one particular season, they tend to sort of droop down.
Okay. Okay.
So there may be some things that I'm not necessarily thinking that maybe they're bad. So I would just, you know, hang on, do good maintenance of them, and then kind of go from there.
Okay. What do you mean by good maintenance? Would you
watering them. Uh-huh. Making sure that they've been watered. You may want to fertilize next spring if you choose to.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
So not fertilize in the fall, just in the springtime.
On young trees, you really don't need to necessarily.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, there we must leave it with our thanks to Sandy. Sandy Mason is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on the program once a month, always on the second Tuesday. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.